Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Two-point try coming up. Snap from center, back to throw. Looking right over the middle, back end zone. Caught, but I think it was out of bounds. It was. Back in the end zone. Not complete. Incomplete. Two-point try doesn't work. Oregon will maintain the lead. 31-29.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Roethlisberger's bounced back from a dreadful performance most of the way, coming up big. Running like an option. Gonna feed the dives. Can he break it? Yes, he did. Touchdown, Pittsburgh.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
2-point conversion attempt for Carolina. Looking, loads of time. He throws incomplete.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, let's do this. Welcome in. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Dirt and Sprague right here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. No Brandon Sprague today. He's dealing with some family stuff. He'll be back tomorrow. Beaver taking a day off on Civil War week. Typical. Can't hang. 3-day work week's too much for him. Can't hang. He's even taking Friday off. He's going to the Civil War. He's getting out of post-game duties. Lazy bastard.
Is he really? I mean, what's the line? Is it still going up? What is it, 14, 15, 16? Are we still climbing?
I actually have Bovada up right now. Don't ask me why.
That might be cruel and unusual punishment to make him sit in there for that. So
now, he went last year to the 69-10 game. I don't know how long he stayed. It is up to already 16.5 now on Bovada.
Yeah.
And that's my cap. I'm not going higher than 17 points. That's as far as I'm willing to go. So we can lock that in right now. Over under, by the way, 69.
I would expect.
I'm sniffing around that number. That's not bad.
I mean, the Beavers are going to get some points.
They
provided
will.
They don't turn it over a
sure.
ton.
Yeah, and Oregon State's defense is historically bad, so Oregon should be able to score.
Oregon
on
should
them,
be
right?
able to move it. They should be able to establish the running game more to the liking of Coach Cristobal, I think, in this. So,
I'm all over that over at 69.
Boy,
I like that.
That gives you what? 49-20.
You give me a game like last night, I'm okay with that. Huh? Can we get one of those shootouts?
Yeah, I'm the only guy that I was busy. So those of us at the Child Center, I'm sure everybody was on their cell phones. I had one of the assistant coaches come up to me in one of the timeouts, go, what's the score?
He was asking anyone to know what's going on in the game.
Yep.
Look, there's no other place to start today. But I mean, we'll talk to Phil Steele coming up 1 o'clock. Cristobal is going to join us in about 26 minutes. We'll talk to him at 12:30. NFL true or false. Marcus Greaves is going to hop in studio, and he'll be the Beaver representative for the day as we'll talk some Civil War with him in the final hour of the show. So we got a lot to get to over the next 3 hours. No Sprague. He'll be back tomorrow. The only place to start today is with that game. I mean, that was, it's so easy in this day and age to say greatest game ever and best I've ever seen it. Look, I don't know if that's the greatest NFL game of all time. I'm not going to say that, but what I will say emphatically, that was the most entertaining football game that I think I've ever watched.
Yeah, that kept everybody's attention all night long. No question about that.
54-51. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And there were even, I mean, this label now is that, you know, no defense. It was like a Big 12 game. That guy, what do we have, 3 defensive touchdowns in that game? So, sure, they were giving up open guys, and there was yards all over the place to be had. But when you have a couple of defensive touchdowns in the game, there were some crazy plays being made. They're re-airing it right now on the NFL Network. I'm watching it. I know a lot of people DVR'd it.
They're going to re-air it in full like 3 different times between now and tomorrow.
I might watch it every single time they re-air it. I can't get enough of that game. That was when we have these big games and these hyped up matchups, and you're just the fear that I always have in the back of my mind is that they don't live up to the expectation. Is that you get a game like this and the Rams roll them by 30 and you're like, that was so much hype, and it ended up being 49-21 or something.
Yeah, I think all that you really want is something that's competitive and dramatic, and whether that ends up being 13-10 because the defenses are up to the challenge or 54-51.
Right.
I think, you know, you can critique pieces here and there after the fact, but I, you know, it got a number for ESPN that's as good as they've had in a few years. I'm surprised, frankly, that number wasn't higher.
Yeah, I think there's two reasons for that. We talked about this before the show. I think it's the cable, the fact that it's on ESPN.
It's on cable, so you knew it wasn't going to get close NBC. To the all-time Monday Night Football ratings back when there were three channels.
Right, and those games were on ABC, yeah. and you would get huge numbers. And that's why, I mean, the highest rated NFL game, I think, this year is Green Bay, New England, because it was a Sunday night game on NBC.
Yep.
So it's a lot easier for people to watch. And I think a lot of people now on ESPN, yeah. they stream it. They don't watch on cable.
I think they're streaming, yeah, between all the other Roku and Sling and Amazon Prime and all that sort of stuff. The ratings need to, I don't know if it's Nielsen, I don't know who it is, but it would be helpful for them to start getting a better handle on how all of that works. You have to be able to, I mean, all that stuff that's done digitally, you can monitor it. You don't have to pry into anybody's information, but yeah, there's how many streams are going out.
You should be able to figure that out.
You can come up with a number.
People opening up the Watch ESPN app and click and play. Yeah. Like, you should be able to get those numbers. And you would think ESPN would want to publicize those numbers because I bet a lot of people were watching that way. It was wild. And we were out at Big Al's. By the way, thanks again to Big Al's. We had a great time at the Civil War party last night. We did the roundtable show there. Anthony and I and Marcus hopped on, and we had a lot of fun talking about the game. And for all the listeners that stopped by and said hello, we appreciate you guys, and thanks for coming out. And it's going to be a fun one on Friday. We can't wait. We had a good time. But it really was. I mean, the main event last night, usually on a night like that, is the Civil War and having fun with the back and forth and the banter or the rivalry. That wasn't the case last night. The main attraction of that party was this game. And the fun part about it was, it felt like every 2 or 3 minutes, if you just weren't watching it intently the entire way, you know, maybe you'd have conversations or glance away, or you'd be looking at something else or talking to somebody else, you would hear an eruption from the people at Big Al's every about 90 seconds. And you'd have to look up at the TV like, dude, we missed another touchdown. Are you kidding me? Like, the back and forth, the defensive touchdowns especially caught people off guard, and you had deep touchdowns. People were just constantly looking up at the TV because everybody in the building would erupt, and there was a decent chunk of Chiefs fans and a decent chunk of Rams fans, and you would hear them every single time something happened. The funny part to think about, too, is that game was supposed to be played in Mexico City.
Yeah.
Not that it would have taken away from it, but I think just having it in the Coliseum and the fire situation that's going on down there, the tragic couple of weeks that they've had, I mean, it added to it having that kind of home advantage, that feeling throughout the course of the night. And one other takeaway I had is I think we can now enter, like, we missed on a lot of bets. Like, I had a 16 NFL parlay this weekend. I think I went 0-6. So, like, we all take our gambling lumps from time to time. Is there a worse bet in the history of sports than betting the under of that game? Like, in the aftermath of it, when you look back and think, because the over-under was set at 64, which is one of the highest numbers the NFL has ever seen to get
a
number of 64.
I think the highest number since the merger.
Highest number since the merger. I think it's the highest ever on Monday Night Football. Like,
yeah.
It was setting all sorts of records at the 64, and Vegas casinos took like seven-figure losses because of this, because they couldn't run. You can't have an over-under of like 80 in an NFL game. They just didn't feel like they could do it. So 64, it felt like that was the highest they thought they could go. And when did it hit? 2 minutes into the third quarter, maybe?
Yeah.
Right, I mean, that thing was, I left the Big Al's after we got done with the roundtable. It was 8. Then it was still in the third quarter. And we were joking, like, the handful of people there had taken the over. And it was, we already won our bet. It's already over. Are you kidding me? Like, man, 105 total points. And we also had this great moment on the broadcast. Abukam, is that how you say his last name? Is that how you pronounce it?
I think so.
Okay, so he's the Rams defensive lineman. He's the guy who had the big plays. Jason Witten has had his moments this year, and here he is trying to pronounce his last name.
Kelsey's on the edge, protecting. But Ibukam was
it. Is it Ibukam? Is that
I think he got it there on the last one.
Get it on the last try.
Look, that's not... look, I'm going to defend him here because, look, Lewis and Clark played like 18 guys off their roster last night, and I only got like the guys that have played so far on my roster, and there was one of those names, and he comes in the last 3 minutes, and...
That
guy shoots it from the corner.
I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name.
So when you're going 90 miles an hour, and especially at the frenetic pace that game was played, unless you've practiced that for over and over and over, I'll give my guy the benefit of the doubt.
That was one of those moments. Somebody had a funny tweet just said, nice try, Witten. Good attempt. Nice try, but we whiffed a couple of times on that one. I have not seen yet any, like, fuddy-duddy takes. Have you seen any of those of, like, hey, no defense?
No, I haven't been looking, and I didn't, you know, I'm not living on social media the way others do.
Right.
So
I just had a feeling that somebody eventually is going to come out with that, like, my column, the NFL used to be better. Like, no, this is great.
There'll be one of those. And I think part of, I mean, you had defensive scores in this game, which is the reason why things get ratcheted up so quickly. It's not like the defenses were total sieves. They participated in the scoring and big plays, but you get 6 lead changes in the fourth quarter of an NFL game.
Right.
Look, sign me up.
You had the Chiefs erase a double digit deficit.
Yeah.
Like I was driving home and I had to catch a little bit on the radio and Kurt Warner was losing his mind. He's like, 2 minutes ago, the Chiefs were down by 10. Now they're up by 4. What's happening? Right. Like the guys didn't know how to react to what was going on. It was funny to have an Arena League guy calling that game. Cause he was joking, just put the nets up and let them return everything and put some walls on the side of the field. That's what this has turned into. But it was damn entertaining. That's all I know. What'd you make of that game? 55305 is the better you today text line. Don't forget Mario Cristobal, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, is going to join us coming up bottom of the hour. We'll talk to Phil Steele at 1 o'clock. I want to talk to him about the Apple Cup, about the Civil War, the playoffs. He's a Heisman voter too, so I want to get his thoughts on the Heisman voting and just kind of how he's handicapping that race right now. We got some poll questions up at Turton Sprague on Twitter. Also, going to dive a little bit more into the Mariners today after that trade of James Paxton. That happened right at the end of the show, and we totally whiffed what went down because Swigart said he was an outfielder, and Sprague said he was Gary Sheffield's kid.
We were glancing quickly and
neither
not
of those
paying
true.
Full attention, so we'll write that ship
we'll
here
today.
We'll
dive a little bit
you.
More into that bad boy and what the Mariners should do the rest of the offseason. So we'll get into that also today. Sprague's out, so just to spite him, I'm going to talk a little basketball. Zach Lowe wrote a piece on the Blazers, and I'll tweet this out with a show page at Turton Sprague if you want to go read it. Really good. I mean, it dives into the playoffs and what happened last year and the message that Paul Allen had to the team, the players' response in the offseason, what Damian Lillard went through, some great quotes and great thoughts in there just on the state of the Blazers and the start that they're off to as they take on the Knicks tonight as the road trip continues. So we'll dive into that at some point as well, and then Marcus Greaves will hop in studio and we'll have some fun Civil War banter coming up in the final hour. All of that is still to come, but what'd you make of the game last night? Let's continue on this Monday Night Football train because it felt like we got a glimpse into the future, and if that's the future of the NFL, sign me up. That's coming up next right here on 1080 The Fan. She was dressed out. Hey, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal, going to hop on bottom of the hour. A bit of potential breaking news in college football. This is breaking news season. we report things and then we see if they end up being true. A gentleman by the name of Peter Gerson. Yeah, I had the same look. His Twitter profile reads, he works for a broadcaster for USC football, basketball reporter for TrojanInsider.com. He hosts a USC sports radio show. So he's a plugged-in USC gentleman, and he is proclaiming breaking news. A source close to the situation is telling me that USC head coach Clay Helton is coming back next season.
Wow.
So I don't know. Look, again, this is the dude has like 200 followers, so... Just throwing it out there, but some folks are running with this on Twitter right now. Yeah. And I think it would depend on, and we can get into this more later, because I think Monday Night Football is more important than this with that game last night. But how much of this, and we talked about it yesterday, the financial situation that they're in right now.
And that, and they, yeah, there's multi-hundred million dollar lawsuits going on. I don't think there's an actual president of the university, right? There might be an interim or somebody. And then they just re-signed Clay. He's got a lot left on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
So this might be more about the infrastructure right now at USC than their desire to actually keep Clay Helton on as the head coach.
Yeah, I don't think this is a message at all that they have confidence in Clay Helton. I think this is a message of financially, the instability, not having an athletic director. We can't make a move like this right
now. Yeah, Lynn Swan might not have the authority to just start making decisions about what he wants and having the university write big checks to buy him out and bring in somebody new. So,
well, and I know this is a couple final thoughts on this as USC, it appears somebody's claiming on Twitter or breaking news that USC's going to keep Clay Helton. I think this is new. We know there's limitations with that football team a little bit outside of having a guy like Sam Darnold. We just kind of know the coach that he is. So you look at the impact that it has on the conference, but I've also talked to some folks in the recruiting world, especially speaking of Oregon, who's trying to close strong with this 2019 class, and they're going after a couple of kids that are also interested in playing for USC. And there was a sense that there's a handful of kids that might commit to Oregon. Their trepidation and fear was if USC gets a game-changing coach. And you saw that with a couple of kids at UCLA last year when they fired Mora, brought in Chip Kelly. A couple of local kids ended up going down there, and they said, hey, we want to play for Chip, and we remember what he is. And a dynamic coach was able to flip some guys. And there's that fear that if USC was to bring in one of those guys, oh, God, what is that to do for your recruiting class of a dynamic guy coming in and changing the way things are done at USC? So this is good news. I think, I mean, unless you want USC to get back to the dominance, which I think that the conference will need at some point. Maybe JT Daniels has a big year with him next year, and they are better. They had a difficult schedule this year. They closed with Notre Dame, by the way, this weekend. But I think the good news, if you're a fan of recruiting battles and you want your kids either to stay committed or if you want to flip some of those USC commits that are wondering if that's where they should go, there's some news to keep an eye on. As USC, some breaking news. We'll see if this ends up being true, but somebody on Twitter is saying, Clay Helton will remain the head coach at USC no matter what happens on Saturday. They are not, by the way, going to a bowl game because you can't get in as a 5-win team in the Pac-12. That's a new rule. They can't get in on one of those loopholes at 5-7. You know, back into last night's game, I wanted to go through this just to illustrate how crazy the game was. When you go and you break down the drive-by-drive of both Kansas City and L.A., there was never a moment in that game outside of the final three possessions where you went more than three possessions without a score. Now, I'm not even going to count that because the last possession of the game was after that pick from Mahomes. It was a kneel down for the Rams that ended the game with, 20 seconds, 15 seconds left on the clock. So if you just take that out, the longest you went last night without a score was two possessions without a touchdown. Here's how it read. Touchdown, punt, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, fumble, touchdown, punt, fumble return for a touchdown, touchdown, kneel to end the half, open in the second half, fumble, touchdown, touchdown, field goal, interception return for a touchdown, punt, punt, touchdown, fumble return for a touchdown, touchdown, back-to-back punts, back-to-back touchdowns, and then the end of the game with the interception and the punts and the other interception. So it just was from start to finish one of those kind of games. And this really is what the NFL has been building for. I mean, for how many years now have we seen them slowly and methodically put rules in place to benefit the offense, to make life more difficult for defense? And, you know, it reminded me, we talked a couple of weeks ago, there was that Wall Street Journal piece about how professional sports are turning into video games, you know, and they use the analogy of NBA Jam back in the day. You're on fire and everybody's shooting from all over the court, and baseball games, everybody's swinging for the fences, and that's what happens now. It's home run or strikeout. And this is what, you know, football video games have been for a long time, running around and throwing it and scoring 50 points. And that's kind of the direction that it's heading. And it really felt like that was a moment the NFL office was like having some sort of sexual experience watching that game last night.
I'm thinking, high-fiving white guys.
This is what we have been building for. This is what we want. And, you know, look, maybe some folks are upset that defenses are going to become obsolete. I think that's still too strong of a word because you saw really last night the difference was, I think, an extra defensive touchdown for the Rams instead of the Chiefs, and they won the game by 3 points. So the defense has still had an impact. You saw the picks late, the strip sack fumbles, the pick six. Like, defense has still played an impact in that game. But when you have a chance to have that level of explosive offense, college football gets knocked down for it because I think the easy analogy is bad defense. But when you watch it in the NFL, there's something different to me because you're dealing with the best in the world doing it, that it takes it to a whole nother impressive level. And I really think that this is the future of the league. Now, not everybody's going to be able to do it. It's like the Warriors in the way they score. Like, teams are going to try, but nobody's going to be as good as them. These teams are the prime examples of what everybody wants to be on offense. But if this is the direction that teams are going and the league's going, like, sign me up. That was entertaining as hell.
Yeah, we'll see. I think there will always be some teams in the NFL who believe in building from the defense first. And so I don't know that I can I think the other thing that made it special too was it was 2-9-1 teams. If that happens,
18-2 combined teams.
That's a different story. Had the Cardinals and Raiders played that game,
right? Yeah, it's not the same.
I think that'd be a totally. We would talk about the ineptitude of those defenses versus the brilliance of the offenses with all the skill positions in two of the brightest offensive minds in coaching in McVay and Reed. You know, so there's perspective there. I don't think I want to see that every single time, but if you, you know, if you give me that in the Super Bowl again, I don't think too many people are going to be disappointed.
Right. And even if it's not like, say, the Saints beat the Rams and you got Kansas City, New Orleans, right? Or if you had New England, New Orleans playing a game like that. Like, yeah. Last year's Super Bowl was one of the more entertaining ones because of the back and forth nature of it. I mean, what was the final of that game? 40-something to 30-something?
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't quite reach the 50-50 plateau. But that's just kind of when you get those back and forth games and the big plays and you get to watch guys. You know, like Woods and Gurley. I know Gurley didn't have a huge night last night, but Tyreek Hill and the catches he made. When you're just watching the best athletes in the world make plays like that, that's really the trend that the NBA went down a long time ago, and I thought it benefited the league a ton. When you realize you have these once-in-a-generation athletes that can make incredible plays and crazy things happen on the court, like you don't want guys beating them up and elbowing them and tackling them to the ground as they're trying to make a layup, and that doesn't benefit the ratings. And some people still have that old school mind of, I wish there was more defense and I wish you could hand check and all that kind of stuff. But the league has really benefited from allowing stars to shine, especially on that side of the ball. And I think that's what the NFL has tried to do. And you know, some people have been outraged about the quarterback and the way, you know, some calls have been made. Clay Matthews is a prime example of that. Of you can't, you know, bury him into the ground anymore and you can't hit him in certain ways and there's ticky-tacky fouls. And I get the frustration in the moment, especially if your team gets hurt by that. But the league is just in a better place when you have guys like Rodgers who are still healthy, and the league is more entertaining when you have guys like Tyreek Hill making the plays that he's making last night and going for 10 catches for 200-some yards and 2 touchdowns. So I think the league is in a great spot right now. The ratings have indicated that all year. They're up despite all the talk that's happened the last handful of years and all the off-the-field drama that's gone on the last couple of years. The ratings are skyrocketing, and last night was another example of it. A great night for ESPN despite it being on cable as the Rams and the Chiefs. By the way, the Chiefs became the first team, I believe, in NFL history to score 50 points and lose.
Yeah.
I think they were 216-0 in the history of the league.
Yeah, first time both teams have scored 50 points in an NFL game.
Yeah, and if you took the under, that might be the worst bet of all time because it was at 64 and they hit 105 total points. Crazy Monday night game. I had a lot of fun. We got some poll questions on that at Turton Spring on Twitter. You can go vote on. Phil Steele's going to join us coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk to him about all things in college football, including the Heisman race, because he's got a vote and I want to know what he's thinking about that race. But coming up next, as always on Tuesdays, we'll talk with the Oregon head coach, Mario Cristobal, off of their win over Arizona State as they get ready for Oregon State on Friday. Head coach of the Ducks is next. All right, welcome back in Civil War week, and you can hear the game right here on The Fan on Friday. We're excited for it. 1 o'clock, Oregon and Oregon State. And joining us now to talk about it is the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal, joining us on the Catlin Capital Hotline. And coach, before we look ahead to this one and talk about a bunch of different things, I want to start with Saturday night, senior night, your first one as the head coach at Oregon and sending a couple of guys off in their last home game at Autzen Stadium. I'm just curious what the message was to the team and to those seniors before the game, and then how nice was it to send them out with their last home game into victory?
Well, it was great. They deserve to go out that way. And I think it was pretty recognized that Arizona State was coming in as the hottest team in the conference. And we made the decision, and the message to our guys was that we have to prove that this game means a lot more to us and that our people mean a lot more to us than it means to our opponent. And to do that, there had to be a certain way we had to prepare. The mental intensity had to be dialed up to a different level. And on a down-by-down basis, our guys went out there and proved that game was more important to us, and it's the right way to send out the seniors, and certainly really happy for them with all the contributions they've made to this program.
Well, and something you've talked about a lot with us here over the last handful of weeks is getting off to better starts and really emphasizing that and wanting to see that. And you did. I mean, you guys got the ball first. You elected to receive. You took it the distance and scored a touchdown on your opening drive. When did that become, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you guys have done that this year. When was that decision made that if we win the toss, we want the ball? And then what did you make your team start on Saturday?
No, we've done it a few times before. Okay. You know, we thought it was important to take the ball. We knew that, like us, we had some injuries. They had some injuries. They were going to have a couple new starters on the defensive side, and we want to try and jump out and take advantage of that. And our guys got off to a really good start. And I thought it was also, you know, something that was really, you know, unique about, you know, this game is that similar to the Washington game, that drive right before the half ended up being a critical piece of the puzzle as well. Staying aggressive with about 40 seconds to go deep in our territory, we just sort of hit on all cylinders, made some big plays, got the ball down the field, and got a touchdown right before the half, and ended up being a big deal.
Yeah, we're talking with the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal, as they get set to take on Oregon State in the Civil War Friday. You can hear it right here on The Fan at 1 o'clock. And you know, really, I thought one of the stories of that game was defensively the way you guys played. And, you know, 17, I believe, of the 29 points for Arizona State came off of turnovers. I thought your young corners were phenomenal against N'Keal Harry, who, when you stand next to that kid, holy smokes, he's a huge body, and he's going to be a stud at the next level. What did you make your defensive performance, and did it feel like those kids are just kind of growing up in front of your eyes out there on the in the secondary with the way they played?
Yeah, the secondary, I mean, you know, in most programs, those guys would be redshirt freshmen, you know, vying for playing time. Here, those guys are true sophomores with a lot of games underneath their belt, and they remember last year. And they remember the 3rd-and-17 shot they threw over our head. They remember, you know, the different plays that their receivers had made. And those guys are great wide receivers, great football team. But, you know, Thomas and Diamador and Ugo and the rest of the gang back there, they just, Nick Pickett too, and they elevated their game to a different level. Guys came off the bench as well. Guys like Mitchell McGraw came off and made big plays. Javon Holland made big plays. And that ended up being the difference in the game. They were 3-of-17, I believe, on third down. Mm-hmm. Which ended up being such a big deal. And, you know, in the first half and for a good chunk of the game, we did a much better job against the run as well, which was something that we had been working on and trying to get back to over the last couple of weeks. So all in all, just a great team effort. And guys, just from start to finish till the very last play and beyond, just went lights out, all-out effort. And that's what it takes in a conference game against a good team like that.
Yeah. Well, one more on that game, and then we'll move on to some other stuff, including the Civil War this Friday. You joked about it in the postgame. You knew you were going to get asked about it this week. But I'm just curious what the explanation was on that fumble that was, you know, refs pointing in opposite directions, and it felt like the crowd goes crazy, Oregon ball. What the explanation was, and then have you ever snapped a headset before?
Yeah, it's probably the third headset that's been a victim of a call. I don't, the explanation itself, I don't know. It felt like a WWE moment with so much chaos and noise going on. But, you know, at the end of the day, the officials were correct. I think one of them just saw that thought he had seen the ball being recovered by us. It ended up slipping out of our hands and in their possession. So that was the chaos and the confusion involved in that. But, you know, I thought we had it. So I guess that's probably best just leaving it right there.
Okay. Yeah, third, we'll keep track of that one. Third headset now that's been a casualty of a call. We're talking with the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Mario Cristobal. They take on Oregon State on Friday. And, you know, you've embraced the rivalries, and we talked to you during the Washington week and understanding how important that one is for the fan base. Obviously, this one, you know, an in-state game and Oregon State and the history that goes into it. You've had former players. I saw you have one yesterday, and I believe you had another one today. Come speak to the team. What's the thinking behind that, of having guys come in on a rivalry week and talk to your players heading into this game?
Just think for a program to have a lot of substance to – for your players to understand the meeting is getting to know the history of your program and those that came before you. And the best way to do it is to bring back former players, and they could get deep into something like the Civil War and why it means so much and why houses and families are divided because of this game on a yearly basis and how it lasts for 364 days until the next one, the bragging rights that go with it. So, and the best way to do that, I really believe that, is continue to bring back the former players, former coaches, guys that just know it and live it inside and out so that our players can also live and breathe a rivalry like this. And it's paid a lot of dividends.
Yeah. And when you're looking at this Oregon State team on film, I mean, they've been showing signs of life as of late offensively, seem to be really well-rounded on that side of the ball with Jonathan Smith as their head coach. What's standing out to you as you're getting ready to take on the Beavers?
We think they've got a really good football team, a lot of good and talented football players. And offensively, they've lit up the scoreboard extremely well and scored a lot of points. And if you can go by a game-by-game basis, and you'll see that in every single game, they had a chance to take over the football game, a chance to make a play and end up being victorious, or doing what they did against Colorado, you know, mm-hmm. where they ended up coming back from a 28-point deficit and getting it done in overtime. So a tremendous amount of respect for them. We realize where and how many playmakers they have, and they have an abundance of them. So for us, looking forward to a great challenge and knowing that, you know, that both teams are going to be sky high for this game to get ready to go.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the second half comeback that they had against Colorado and erasing that 28-point deficit, that was a wild one, watching them win that game. And that's something, I mean, you guys have shown flashes this year and had, you know, put together a couple of great quarters, but I think you're still, you know, fighting for that complete four-quarter game. We've seen it a couple of times, but a tale of two halves a little bit on Saturday. How much is that in the messaging for you of realizing that Oregon State has shown, hey, in the past, doesn't matter what your lead is, they can still come back and win that game, and you got to put together four quarters to beat them.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think the best part about it is that the tape speaks for itself. You don't have to create a crisis. You don't have to head fake your team in any way to create urgency. It's on tape, you know. And you know what? Last time we went over there, we didn't do real well. Mm-hmm. Last time we went over there, you know, our program, and I wasn't here at the time, but it doesn't matter. I'm part now of the history, so it's as if all of us were there. We didn't do a very good job, and we've obviously got to do a much better job on the road, and here's a tremendous opportunity for that.
Yeah, and a couple of your players mentioned that in the postgame on Saturday. They remember the last time they went into Reser Stadium. We're talking with Mario Cristobal, head coach of the Oregon Ducks, as they get set to take on Oregon State in the Civil War on Friday. I did want to ask you another thing that's just kind of on the radar in college football, and I don't know if we're going to have a chance to talk to you before that date, so I wanted to pique your interest. That early signing day coming up, and this is a newer thing. I don't think you had to deal with this in your last stint as a head coach. So just starting with some generalization, just your thoughts on the early signing day and how tough that is to try and juggle getting ready for a game, but also trying to close strong on the recruiting trail.
I think it's a positive thing. My last year caught us by surprise because I was hired and all of a sudden there was a bowl game announced and we couldn't go recruit because we had the bowl game, you know, right before that signing day. So for whoever has a game before that day, it's difficult. And we went through it last year. Now, if you don't, If you truly have really good relationships with your commitments and whatnot, it's a great thing because you put it to bed in December and guys can focus on academics. They can focus on just being with their families for the holidays or state championship games. You could focus on the next year's class. I think it's a great thing, and I think it moves us more towards an honorable process, right? I mean, how many times do you see a commitment then a decommitment?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's right now, sometimes it's like a restaurant reservation where a commitment's made, then it's canceled later just to go to another restaurant, right? So, again, we're not going to know for another 5 or 6 years. You got to take this in 5-6 year cohorts and then examine it to see exactly what sticks and what doesn't. Just like the spring football visits, right? That's a brand new thing. You know, a lot of people had official visits in the springtime before the season. Well, on signing day, we're going to find out which way that goes for the first time. And then we're going to have to run that process for 5 years to see where what the data tells us.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. It's exciting for college football fans, I know that, to get a chance to look at that recruiting class and officially getting kids signed and seeing what it's going to look like for 2019. Well, I know you're busy and you guys have a crazy schedule this week with the night game on Saturday. You're playing a day earlier. Are you going to get any chance to have a Thanksgiving break on Thursday?
You know, not really, but that's okay. To me, we'll be able to break bread together as a football family, you know, with those families that are in town and get to bed early. You know, we have a tremendous opportunity on Saturday. Our guys are really, they're fired up for this game, just like we you know, on Friday, I keep even forgetting. I don't have a calendar in my head. You know, we just kind of Groundhog Day this thing.
Right.
But, you know, it's everyone in the state's excited about this thing, and it's the first time for myself going over to their place. And, again, it's but there's plenty of time to sit down as a family after that.
Yeah.
I think we have 3 hours on Saturday before we hop on a plane to go recruiting.
There you go. Well, we appreciate the time as always. Mario Cristobal, head coach of the Oregon Ducks. They take on Oregon State Friday. You can hear it right here on The Fan at 1 o'clock. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Good luck on Friday, and thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me. Have a great day.
Yeah, you too. And that's one I think that's I don't know if it's on people's radar or not, but that's signing day. Now, this is year two of the early signing day period that you can have, and it's one where I think you're always trying to figure out how you should feel about a program and a year that they've had. And I think it's one thing that could be a pretty big positive for Oregon fan, depending on how that first signing day goes. That maybe you get a win on Friday. It's close because it's a rivalry game. But if you could finish at 8-4, you go into a bowl game like that, and then maybe you get some good news in a couple of weeks on the recruiting trail. You got a chance to build some momentum and then try and finish strong, of course, in February. But what would you make of the year? If Oregon were to finish at 8-4, your thoughts on that kind of season, what it would mean? And we'll talk some more about that early signing day and the Clay Helton news today, potentially, of him sticking around in Los Angeles. We'll do that next. Phil Steele's going to join us top of the hour back after this on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, a swag back for a Reflex and Knee Clinic. You've heard me talking about Dr. Russ Riggs and his team down there and the revolutionary work they're doing, trying to have so many people just everyday lives keep you from getting that chronic knee pain that can so affect life later on down the road. I was in recently, had that full screening, the breakthrough technology of ultrasound right there in front of me. And I saw, even though there's plenty of cartilage still there in the knees, it's starting to fray. It's starting to break down. And so now we've got scheduled our first treatments coming up, non-surgical treatments. And if you can catch it early enough, you mainly need something once a year to keep it from deteriorating further. So we've got that scheduled, whether it's joint fluid, stem cell, PRP, maybe just as simple as an offloading brace to just kind of help handle the weight there so it doesn't all go right into the joint. Whatever the case, you want to go in and see them. Do what I did. Go to reflexknees.com. Go get a full screening and find out about the revolutionary work they're doing there at Reflex Knee Clinic. Tell them Swag sent you.
Hey, Phil Steele, join us top of the hour. We'll talk some more college football with him. Got to get to some baseball stuff. NFL true or false coming up. Good article on the Blazers from Zach Lowe today about just what they went through in that postseason sweep last year. All that's still to come in the next hour and plus. We were talking with Mario Cristobal, head coach of the Ducks, as he gets set for the Civil War. I will say on this rivalry, you know, who knows what this game will turn out to be. We've had years where it felt like it was going to be a blowout, and the blowout happened. You know, last year was an example of that. Then you have years where you go back, you know, maybe 3 years ago when Vernon Adams and that Oregon team was, what, I think a 9-win team, and Oregon State came in with Seth Collins as their quarterback, and it was a 30-point game at the half, and next thing you know, it's a one-possession game in the fourth quarter. It's one of those things where you just, you kind of hope for a good game, hope it's entertaining and exciting, and you just kind of throw the records out when a couple of rivals play. But I will say it's fun to have a couple of coaches in this thing that embrace it, you know, and I know Cristobal doesn't have the history that Jonathan Smith has. Smith played it and he understands it, and that was a big reason I love that hire for Oregon State, of just getting a guy who knows what it's like to play there and what it takes to win there. And I think if you give him time, he's eventually going to get you to where you want to go. But for Cristobal, you know, he had it earlier this year with the Washington game where he embraced that rivalry. And I think fans, you like to hear that stuff. You like to hear a coach echo what you're feeling on the week of a rivalry game. And Cristobal's done it, and love the fact that he's inviting former players in. And Anthony and I were talking about that last night on the roundtable, about what it meant to him to have guys come back and talk about the program. And he mentioned that he had the chance to do it a couple of times under Mike Bellotti when he was still playing in the NFL, and he'd have the opportunity to go talk to the current team. And it meant a lot to him. And you hope that the current players listen to that message and understand, because a lot of these kids, really on both teams, they don't understand the rivalry the way that some do. I mean, you have local examples on both teams who grew up in it and understand it. But for the guys who are from out of the state, you don't really get it maybe until you play in it for the first time, or you experience what the fan interaction is like on both sides. So to have somebody kind of set the scene for you of what to expect for a Civil War, I like that he's doing that. I think it's a positive step, because there's some coaches in the past at Oregon who haven't done that. And Cristobal clearly has changed that messaging there. You know, and for Oregon, this is an interesting one for a chance to finish at 8-4. You know, maybe some people will still say it's an incomplete grade, and I understand that because of some of the way some of their games went, the Arizona game and the way they played, Utah, the slow start, Washington State, the slow start, even in the Arizona State game, a great first half and a terrible second half. They've been kind of an incomplete team all year, and they've shown you flashes of what they could be, but they haven't been able to put it together for four quarters very often. But when you go back to August, the over-under that was set for this team was 8. And so, I mean, they have a chance with a win this weekend to hit that number on the head at 8-4. And, you know, look, myself, I was one of the folks who expected more. I predicted 9-3 at the start of the year, so that's clearly not going to happen. But it was the messaging that I had, even in the down moments, if you go back to last week, the way we were talking about that Utah loss, of just saying, you know, look, if I told you in August that Oregon was going to go 8-4 with a win over Washington, maybe some folks would say I want more, and I get it. You know, so they left a lot to be desired because of their performances.
Yeah,
but
I think that Stanford game's the one that's just going to stick.
Sure, that one slipped through your fingers as well.
Everybody's craw. But overall, I think you combine that. I think the other thing that will help is if a lot of these high-profile recruits sign at the early signing date, and you see when the initial signing classes come out, or the rankings after that initial signing date, and the Ducks are up there in the top 10, then I think everybody would be like, okay, yeah, we had some injuries and maybe didn't understand how thin the depth was. You know, you like your starting 22 that were out there, but after that, so once you started getting in to, you know, 7, 8, 9 deep on the offensive
right,
line and third and fourth string linebackers and that sort of thing, you know, it's just, it takes time. He's told us, you know, 2 recruiting classes. Talk to me in 2 recruiting classes.
And then they're going to have the depth that they feel like they want. And I think that is a good point of, if you can finish at 8-4 with a win on Friday, you get by Oregon State. And if you're able to look up in a couple of weeks and see those national rankings and Oregon is sniffing around a top 3 or 4 recruiting class in the country.
And you have a bowl game that you are most likely going to be a favorite in.
Right. Yeah, and who knows what bowl game it's going to be. And we'll find that all out in the next 2 weeks of which game they're going to go to and what date they're going to play. And you hope it's kind of a fun and, you know, entertaining matchup of the team that you'll face off in that moment. 8-4 could put you in a decent bowl game. So there's a chance there to end with a positive for a year that was really a roller coaster of emotions of everybody getting over their skis after a win over Washington and thinking of what the year could be. You got a chance to look up, say 8-4, win over a rival in Washington. You close with a strong recruiting class. It has a chance to be a positive, but they got to go out and take care of business starting on Friday and then following up with that early recruiting day. We'll talk more about this game in the Oregon State perspective on things. Marcus Greaves, our buddy, works here. He played at Oregon State. He was a member of the last Oregon State team to win a Civil War. He was a part of that team a couple of years back at Reese. He's going to hop in studio with us in the final hour, and we'll talk some more Civil War as that game, only a couple of days away, continues to inch closer and closer. That's still to come in the final hour. We'll get back into some college football stuff. We'll talk some NFL with the NFL True or False Blazers and their situation as their road trip continues tonight. The Mariners and the teardown. A ton still to get to, but we'll start the final hour with Phil Steele, the college football guru. He's going to kick off the second hour. We'll do it next right here on 1080 The Fan.